Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Kane's Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest is John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, and he's in San Diego as the Giants are taking on the Padres. And I guess it's never too late, John. The Giants are still in this thing mathematically. They've been able to win lately. The Dodgers have been losing a little bit lately. So now a six-game deficit with 12 games to go and still that big four-game series at AT&T Park, Giants and Dodgers next week. But before you get to that part, I mean, how confident is this team that it could make a run and get the help that the Dodgers will lose?
Well, I don't think it was all that confident in recent days when the deficit got to 8.5, but then the Dodgers started losing and losing and losing. They've lost four in a row, and the Giants have rolled along. They've won 10 out of 15. They've beaten some teams they should have beaten and had some, you know, typically tough losses along the way in which they didn't hit, but they're playing teams that are definitely beatable in San Diego right now, and then off to they'll play the A's and they'll finish up with the Rockies, and of course they have those four games against the Dodgers. But listen, it's six back with 12 to go. And now you remember 1951, right? You were a Cub reporter in the press box.
Yeah, right.
At Ebbets Field.
Well, I know the Giants came back from a huge deficit to end up in that game, the Bobby Thompson game. I know that.
Well, more than that. They were 13.5 back in August. Yeah, they won 37 out of 44. But at one point, they were in the exact predicament that the Giants are right now. Six back with 12 to go. The 51 Giants were six back with 12 to go.
Wow.
And then they finished the season, the regular season, the scheduled season, in a deadlock with the Dodgers and forced that three-game playoff between the two New York teams, and of course Bobby Thompson homering off Ralph Branca to win the third game and earn a spot in the World Series. But yeah, 12 games to go for the Giants, and they were six back, and those Dodgers' epic collapse, those Giants' epic comeback, you can't say this is as epic because the Giants were never 13.5 back, the biggest deficit, 8.5 just the other day over the weekend. But it would be pretty epic, and no sense in cooling the champagne right now and getting it ready for a celebration party. But the Dodgers, well, listen, the next two nights they have Kershaw and Greinke. So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Right. Well, I think it would be epic, John, not just because of the numbers you're talking about there, but also because I don't know about in recent memory a team that's been more banged up that could come back. And you look at the Giants' championship seasons, there were underdog possibilities that you looked at. I mean, you looked at 2010, they were kind of the everybody talked about them being the misfit team, I guess, that just kind of, you know, went to the World Series, won for the first time. 2012, backs to the wall, it seemed like the whole way. Last year, they had to get through a wild card game. So this year, it's different in that, I mean, how many players have been banged up? How do you even make a run like this with many of your best players out?
I looked at the lineup card before the opening game in San Diego Tuesday, and Bochy had five guys listed among, you know, on the bench in terms of position players. And this is late September when you usually have 10, 12,
right.
You know, just a bunch of guys, you know, three or four catchers, a bunch of infielders, reward the double leg guys, the triple leg guys. You know, they might not play much, they might pinch or unpinch hit, they might get a start in there. But five guys, it's like mid-June when you have five guys on the bench. But four of those guys are September call-ups, and the fifth guy was Buster Posey, who was scratched with some hip and back tightness. So it's pretty amazing looking at this team. You had five guys in the lineup who were playing only because of injuries to other guys, and they win 4-2. I mean, it's a daily thing. Before the game, you learn that Juan Perez, who was pretty valuable last year, good runner, good defender, played in the postseason. He had a bad swing Sunday. He shows up Tuesday. He's got an oblique. He's out for the year. On this team, if you don't have a concussion, you have an oblique. You know, Hunter Pence, Brandon Crawford. So Pence makes the trip. he still has dreams of playing in that final week, who knows. But guys who don't make the trip, Brandon Belt, Nori Aoki, Gregor Blanco, they all have concussions, and Belt is supposed to see a specialist in Pittsburgh, Michael Collins, on Thursday. He's the guy who sees all these guys with the concussion syndrome and all that stuff and symptoms. So he probably won't play the rest of the year. Aoki, Blanco, they won't play. Joe Panik won't play. Perez won't play. These guys are all out. You know, we know all about Tim Lincecum and Matt Cain. You know, where have they gone? And, you know, here's Chris Heston. He can't go five innings. He hasn't done it in a month and a half. And sure enough, he goes only 4 1/3 Tuesday night. He gives up only two hits, but he walks five guys. He's up to 94 pitches. Bochy has to pull him with the bases loaded and nobody out. And but anyway, it's George Contos had to bail him out. It's amazing, and Bochy says it every day. It's just amazing how many guys have been lost. But here they are, maybe not knocking on the door, but down the road, about to knock on the door if the Dodgers keep losing and the Giants. You know, hey, it's going to be a big series with the A's, and it's not just going to be about Zito and Hudson. It's going to be about, hey, you kind of got to win those games if you really want that Dodger series next week to matter.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Kane's Tire in Santa Fe. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
You mentioned the concussions, and I don't know. I mean, in all sports now, it's so prevalent. You go back years ago, nobody really talked about it. I guess players just kind of played through it. But now you're getting more of them, and, you know, it's not the player's fault if he gets hit in the head with a pitch like Aoki did, or Belt gets, I think it was, kneed into the helmet, and you find out a few days later that you're not okay. So what do you think about these injuries as far as, you know, the concussions, what baseball can do? I mean, are the helmets, you know, not thick enough? I mean, I know they came out with some that were kind of ugly and the players didn't want to wear them. We're just seeing more and more, not just with the Giants, but all around baseball.
Yeah, it's I'm talking to Jeremy Affeldt about this not too long ago. He's been in the majors for a long time. He's seen a lot of things. As a reliever, he's had some close calls, line drive coming back, missing his head by fraction of an inch or whatever, you know, collisions on the field. And not that these things didn't happen 20, 30, 40 years ago, but there was no concussion 7-day DL. There was no specialist in Pittsburgh that these guys could go to. They just maybe took a day or two off, played through it, and just wondered what the heck was going on, and then just rested in the off season. So there's a lot, obviously, more care to what's going on now. It seemed odd that the Giants are snake bit, and you see it in football a lot. You see it in baseball a lot. And even last night, even in the opener in San Diego, the kid catcher, Trevor Brown, who's what I call them, the backup to the backup to the backup to the backup.
Right.
You know, Posey's out, and Hector Sanchez is out, and Susak is out, and Jackson Williams was called up earlier, and he didn't play, and this guy plays, so it's like, how deep do you go? And they're still in it. And he gets his bell rung. I mean, it was the third inning, and he takes a pitch. I think it hit the batter's foot and bounced off Brown's throat, and he had trouble breathing, and you wonder where he actually did get hit. And the trainer comes out, and this kid was not going to say, "Hey, I, you know, take me out. I'm hurting." I mean, he waited a week after the AAA season to get the call. He wasn't expecting this at all, and now he's in the game, and he's catching the game that's, you know, could be pretty meaningful. And later in the game, he doubles off the center field wall to score the first run of the game, and they win 4-2. So it was a pretty crazy day for Brown and the Giants. And talk about concussions. Adrianza was at first base filling in for Posey,
right?
And he takes a ball off his head. Yeah, you know. So like two moments in one game, you think, oh gee, not another concussion situation. But that's the way of the world with this team.
We'll continue the conversation with John Shea, San Francisco Chronicle columnist, after this. Inside China Basin is sponsored by Angel Borelli, a nationally known expert on pitching mechanics from right here in the Bay Area. She works with some of the best pitchers in the Bay Area, troubleshooting and solving their performance issues. Listen to Angel Borelli's weekly podcast, The Fix, which discusses issues and solutions for pitchers from a sports science perspective. And get a weekly tip on pitching at Angel Borelli Pitching on Facebook. Check out our website, jimscience.com, where you can order her books and other publications. Contact Angel Borelli today. And stay with us after the conversation with John Shea, as Angel will analyze the delivery of Chris Heston of the Giants. You know, one guy who did come back pretty strong is Angel Pagan, and it was amazing how, you know, once he got the rest and his knees were better, and I don't know that he's 100%, but he's just running so much better. He's hitting more for power. He didn't have any home runs early in the year and hit another one in the game Tuesday. So what do you think about the longer-term prospect for him next year? Because I know that there was talk about how Kelby Tomlinson might start taking balls in the outfield and look at him maybe as being a center fielder. But what about Pagan and where he stands physically?
Yeah, he was counted out by fans. He was counted out by media. He could not run. He could not defend. He could not hit. And they finally just said, hey, you got to rest. They put him on the DL. They rested his knees. And you're right. He's come back. I mean, this is the third year of a four-year, $40 million deal. And people were saying, well, let's just eat the contract. And, you know, they got to go forward next year. But he's totally in on playing center field next year, unless they put him in a corner, put him in left field. But he robbed a guy of a home run the other day. He's sort of a lot more authoritative in the outfield, calling guys off, maybe charging balls. He was never a great defender, but you're right. Now he's getting on base. He's generating some offense. He hit the third home run. It took him forever to hit his first. Now he has three, and suddenly you got to look at him as a candidate to be in the lineup next season when it starts. And who would have thunk that? And, you know, maybe they do pull him aside in the off season and say, listen, you know, we got three. Maybe they pick up somebody. Maybe they bring Aoki back to play left. I don't know what they do. They have so many options. Marlon Byrd, you know, his contract option might be vested with 550 plate appearances. He's getting close to that. And it may happen, it may not. But so they have all kinds of options in the outfield. And, you know, they have two young guys, you know, off the bench now, just called up, including Jared Parker, who they like a lot, you know, supply some left-handed pop. But, you know, who knows what's happening with that guy. But for now, he's kind of back to the old Pagan, and that's getting on base, you know, being aggressive on the bases and kind of firing up the team. You remember a few years ago how good they were with him in the lineup versus how bad they were with him out of the lineup. He was kind of a difference maker.
He was. I mean, yeah, that's kind of the way I looked at it with Pence this year. The record was so much better with him in there, but he missed so many games. And I guess Pagan is kind of proof positive that you can come back from injuries that, you know, maybe people aren't thinking that you can. I mean, he had the hamstring, he had the back, and that leads me to talk about Joe Panik here, because how concerned are the Giants about this? I mean, he came back, and I guess it was premature, but he's a young guy, and he has these back problems. What do you think the plan is as far as his rehab in the offseason?
You know, they remember before the season, Brian Sabian talking about this new airplane. Everything's going to be first class. You know, we've been banged up. We're an older team, and now there's going to be more comfort. And now you got all these obliques and back problems. And you sort of wonder what's going on here. Maybe they need to redo their stretching program, pregame stretching program. Maybe they have to do a lot more than they're doing. But for Joe Panik, all along they've said lower back inflammation. It's more than that. We don't know exactly the extent of the injury, but when they say things like, well, it's not going to be chronic, well, who said it was going to be? But now they say, well, it's not going to be chronic, and who knows? And there's some concern about his off season and what they're going to do. They're going to monitor him every week. They're going to follow what he does. You know, he's totally going to rest and not do any baseball activity for a long time here, but it's just going to be constant treatment. And even in spring training, you sort of wonder, you know, the Marco Scuderos, the Freddie Sanchez, the Robbie Thompsons. And by the way, those are all second basemen, aren't they? And they all seem to have issues with their back, and that's, you know, that's a fluke. Those the first two guys I mentioned were older, and Robbie had, you know, back issues earlier in his career that bothered him later. So this guy is a young ball player. This was supposed to be his first full season, and he's so valuable to the team on offense and defense. Really makes that up the middle defense sparkle. We all remember his Game 7 diving play in the World Series to bring the momentum to the Giants' side. But he's so valuable. They really need him, and they really got to look out for him. And it's a major concern when a ball player has such extensive back issues.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. And now we have Angel Borelli, and this is our last pitching segment, as Angel is an expert in pitching mechanics. And we've talked about a lot of the Giants' pitchers, and since Chris Heston pitched yesterday and he's had a really good rookie season overall, we thought it'd be a good idea to analyze Chris. And, you know, he started out so great, Angel. He had 11 wins against 5 losses and looked like he was going deeper into games than he is now. And he was more consistent. He's been a little more erratic in the second half of the year. And I think that on Tuesday night, it was a good example of it. You watched it. He walked 5 in 4 1/3 innings, and he didn't get the W because he wasn't able to go 5 innings. His pitch count was up to 94. But what have you noticed about his delivery?
Well, what's interesting about his delivery is that the two things I want to talk about are things you don't have to have a camera to see. Now that I mention it, go back and look at him the next time you see him pitch. You're going to see this easily. The first thing I want to talk about is something you don't want to do, and it's something that can lead to an injury. He takes his pitching arm out of the glove, and as he raises it up to shoulder height, which is what the pitchers do with both arms as they're striding, he goes above the level of the shoulder. And he does this because he leads slightly up with his elbow. He's got a slight what we call inverted W style, but it's not as big as we've seen with other pitchers. But because of that, he goes too high. And when he starts to make his turn towards the plate, you will notice that his elbow is higher than his shoulder. And the reason why this is a problem is the supraspinatus, which runs across the top of the shoulder. It's right underneath where your seam would be on the top of a shirt. It is one of the rotator cuff muscles. It's responsible for lifting the arm up along with the shoulder muscles. You do not want that muscle to become fatigued or injured because it has a lot of work to do throughout the innings. And when you have a style that lifts that higher than the shoulder, that muscle starts abutting up against a bone that it runs under, and you can end up with serious shoulder problems and or fatigue in the arm. The other thing that muscle does is it helps the arm stay in place. So if he has location issues and he's got this problem, that would be the first thing to correct, because his arm may not be staying in the same location in his shoulder joint that he wants it to. Plus, he's creating a lot of laxity by overstretching it. So that's the first thing I want everyone to see. If you have a pitcher that does that, or if you are a pitcher and you do that, that's something you want to get control of. You need to know how to stop at shoulder height. The second thing about him that I noticed, and you'll notice it too, he has a great finish on his off-speed pitches, his changeup, his other pitches. He's got a different follow-through and a different control over his front side that he does with his fastball. I didn't even have to look at the speed to know if he was throwing a fastball or not. Now, the problem with this is, and it's got good news and bad news, you have to get over your front leg to be effective with off-speed pitches. And I think it's just that the pitchers think they've got to do something more and they want to get closer to the plate. So they usually have a way better front leg. They have more control at the end, and it looks fantastic. He needs to try to get that going with his fastball because, number one, he'll be releasing closer to the plate, which will get him out of that 89-mile-per-hour range that he seems to stay in. But number two, you want to have those consistent mechanics, and you want to have a front leg that's stable, and you want to release close to the plate on all the pitches. The fact that on two of his pitches, I saw beautiful follow-throughs, and boom, the second he throws a fastball, he stands up in the middle of his follow-through. He looks like he's falling off, out of control falling off, not a momentum falling off, but an out of control falling off. And what that's going to do is it mixes up his delivery to the point where he could have consistent location inconsistencies. And so we want to see, especially when a pitcher, we already know he knows how to do it, now bring it to your fastball. And that's what I noticed about him. And both those things, if you watch him, you'll be able to see it with your naked eye.
kind of explains why at times he'll fall behind in the count, and I think the catchers feel like they want to call breaking balls for Heston because it's more reliable. I mean, it seems like later in the year, the fastball hasn't been as reliable for him to throw strikes. You know, just like what you're talking about, his delivery isn't as consistent, and it makes the catchers think, you know, maybe we need to call off-speed pitches.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That may be why they're doing it. So, you know, in baseball, like, a lot of people know a lot of things, but they don't really know what they know. And then somebody like me says something, and they go, oh, yeah, you know what? That is what's going on. So, yeah, that's something. And he's a great example of a pitcher that could be really good, but he's got just a few little things that need to have some attention.
Well, it's been great having all of these tips throughout the season. Angel, look forward to doing it again next year.
Thank you, Joe, for having me. I love doing it.
That's pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. I want to thank her for joining us throughout the season. Also want to thank John Shea for coming on today. And we'll be back with John for part two of our conversation on Friday. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.